When I was just getting so relaxed, I was starting to snooze off.
This is nice. I'll just sit back and relax. My name's Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here. Good to see you guys. I see a lot of people I know. I see, I sold my car for Cocaine John. You know, you get guys in AA, they come up to you and they say, do you know Joe? I said, Joe. I know 10,000 Joes, you know. Yeah, I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group. I haven't found a Sabbath drink since January 25th, 1981. And I'm grateful. And tonight we're on step 7. And one of my favorite steps. I think I told you this last time, 6 and 7. They call my old-timer steps. And 6 is we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And we spoke about that last week. I enjoyed speaking to you all about that. And we talked about Paggles. You know, that's after you get rid of the booze, the pride, anger, gluttony, greed, lust, envy, and sloth. And my buddies, they were with me before I started drinking, during, and after. And so now we're going to talk about, I really don't plan this stuff much. I think about it. I have there's nothing up my sleeve. I don't have any material, really. And but I sort of have an idea of where I want to go with this, because I sort of have a feeling for the important concept or principles or the things that underline some of these steps. And I did a 6-step. I remember doing the 6-step. I remember getting on my knees and telling God, saying the prayer and telling God that I was ready to have him remove all my defects of character. And I believe for a nanosecond I was serious. And I mean, I really believe I was serious. I'm not joking about that. I'm not being sarcastic for a moment or two. And then I got off my knees and was off to the races again. So the point is, I guess, in my life is, you know, they say we have to get rid of these old ideas, or the result was nil, unless we got to let go absolutely. So the problem is, I'm going to go on a brief little overview of the problem, which I've stressed at almost every meeting here. I know most of you have heard it, but for those who haven't, you know, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous because I had a problem with alcohol. I'm probably not the only one in here who came to Alcoholics Anonymous because they had an alcohol problem. If you've been here for a while, I've been here for a little over 33 years, you've probably noticed that most of the people in AA don't drink. Has anybody noticed that? And so it's really hard to figure out why they're still going to Alcoholics Anonymous if alcohol is the problem. And of course, I got to the point in my life. Now, listen, I know that you guys are brilliant. I mean, I buy into the concept that alcoholics, by and large, are incredibly smarter than the regular population. So I'm with you on that one. Time Magazine and most of the research hasn't caught up with that yet. One day they're going to figure it out. But for some strange reason, you know, the first step is we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. Now, I came to a point in my life where in around December 25th, 1980, when I got down on my knees, gave my life to Jesus and all that sort of stuff, I came to a point in my life where I realized that my life was unmanageable. Now, I didn't necessarily say those words, you know what I mean? I didn't necessarily say I'm powerless over alcohol, my life's unmanageable, but I know how to say the words, I want to stop drinking. I remember looking a guy in the eye and say, I can't stop drinking. Anybody ever say, I can't stop drinking? I looked a guy, now, prior to the day I told the guy, I can't stop drinking, if you would come up to me, now, prior to the time I told the guy I can't stop drinking, I still couldn't stop drinking. You understand? I mean, 6 months prior to that, I couldn't stop drinking. 3 years prior to that, I couldn't stop drinking. My first wife said to me, beautiful gal, beautiful house, beautiful son, perfect life. She said, you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. I walked out the door. Got in my car, 12 words, pretty easy to understand. You come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. Drove my car to the first light. sat there and said, what the hell do you mean by that? That night I was drunk, that was the end of a five-year marriage. You understand what I'm saying? 5 years before, when I got a divorce and that happened, I couldn't stop drinking. And I couldn't stop drinking. I could not stop. I left my wife. I said, I'm free. I'm free. She kicked me out. I'm free. Free to go to the bar. I was never free not to go to the bar. I used to say to myself, I'm not going to drink today. And I'd mean it. And by 5 o'clock, I'd be drunk. I'd say, I'm not going to buy booze today. And mean it. By 5 o'clock, I was searching for dimes, nickels, and quarters. Get up $2.89 so I could buy a quart bottle of Carlos Rossi Chianti, sit by an LP record, and listen to Only the Lonely 10,000 times. You know, fluctuating between thinking about my funeral with all the gals gathering around, feeling sorry for the way they treated me, and singing that song on stage while they're all white. I mean, yeah, I had a vivid imagination. You know, I could not stop drinking, but I could not stop drinking years before that, during that, years after that. But if you had tapped me on the shoulder and told me I had a drinking problem, I'd say you're crazy. In other words, I always was powerless over alcohol, but if you asked me about my problems or what was going on, I'd say I had a romance problem, or I had a female problem, or I had a money problem, or I had a boss problem, or I had a health problem, or I had a you don't understand problem. I was an if onlyer, I was a yes butter, I was a you don't understander. You know, I was maxed out on my credit cards. I bought more crap that I didn't need with money I didn't even have to impress people I didn't like that you could possibly imagine. I mean, I had a lot of problems, but I can promise you this. Up until the time I looked that guy in the eye, after I lost the wife, lost the kid, lost my self-respect, lost everything, up until that moment when I looked that guy in the eye and I said, I need help, I can't stop drinking, I promise you, I didn't think I was powerless over alcohol. I didn't think I was powerless over alcohol until the exact moment where, in my mind, my life became unmanageable. It became, here's a good word, overwhelming. Have you ever been overwhelmed by life? You know? I mean, that could actually happen to me today. I mean, it's very, very rare. I could actually be in a position where there's just too much shit coming at me at the same time. Now, I'm pretty good multitasker. I can handle one idiot, and two idiots, and three idiots, and a telephone call. By the time he gets to five or six idiots, I'm saying, whoa, man, whoa. There's only so much. But you know, what happens is when you're an alcoholic and your life has become unmanageable and you hit bottom, it just becomes overwhelming. You just give up. And around that time when life became overwhelming with me, my life was unmanageable. And somehow, for some reason, I didn't connect it with the fact that I needed more money. Money wouldn't have helped. I didn't connect it with the fact that I needed a girlfriend. A girlfriend wouldn't have helped. I gave up on that a long time. I didn't need to connect it with the fact. As a matter of fact, all those things were hassles. My life was unmanageable, and I absolutely connected it with the fact that I couldn't stop drinking. Okay? You understand what I'm saying? In other words, when the magic happened for me was the precise moment when I connected my powerlessness over alcohol with the fact that my lives had become unmanageable. So it was absolutely necessary for my life to go into the shit can. I mean, it was absolute. If my life didn't become unmanageable, hey, listen, you see it on the papers every day. You watch Justin Bieber, you know what I mean? We all know where he's headed. I mean, God bless him. I hope he makes it. But you know, when you have $100 million, it's hard for your life to be unmanageable. You just hire another lawyer. You know, we watch these people, you know, it just ain't going to work until desperation sets in and life becomes unmanageable. So here's the deal. Why would I figure that wasn't a pattern that was going to go on and on forever with everything else? Why would I think with my crazy alcoholic mind that I would sort of come in here and I would just automatically see all my defects of character, get well, realize I'm powerless over them, and get rid of them immediately? Why wouldn't I figure that the first step, sort of in a strange way, happens over and over on the real deal? And if it took me 31 years, maybe not 31 years, 50, I started drinking when I was 15, maybe if it took me 16 years of drinking until I got to the point, because my life had become unmanageable, to think, feel, realize that, you know, the first step in getting out of jail is you got to know you're in jail in the first place, right? If you don't know you're in jail. If it took me 16 years of losing people in my life, losing my self-esteem, losing my self-respect, losing my wife, losing this, losing that, getting to the point where life was over, 16 years of going through that to even get to the point where I realized, hey, I've got a drinking problem, I can't stop drinking. How many years on the planet do you think it takes to realize you got a lust problem? Or you got an envy problem? And in a strange sense, they work in a little more of a subtle way. Because let me tell you something. You can be a billionaire, you can make a lot of money, you can be really successful, and have a lust problem and be president of the United States. You know what I mean? I mean, you can have all sorts of, I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, it's amazing. They don't arrest you for driving while feeling sorry for yourself. They really don't. You know, there's a lot of things you can carry on in life and sort of function with some of this. And, you know, of course, once you get in here, you don't realize until you're in here for about 2 or 3 months, you stop drinking, you feel great, all of a sudden you got money, people are patting you on the back, you're home, and then the day comes, whether it's a month sober, or 2 months sober, or 5 months sober, or 10 months sober, where you realize it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and whatever it is, you know, for no apparent reason, your mind is ganging up on you, you're going nuts, and you know it can't be alcohol, because you haven't had a drink in 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, and you realize it's alcohol, and then you realize there's something wrong with you, and you call up your sponsor and he says, you know, and he tells you what it is. Or you learn what it is and you realize that the real problem you have is something called alcoholism, which really has nothing to do with the alcohol. Which has nothing to do with the alcohol. How's that? You know, you sort of think it has something to do with the alcohol because they call it alcoholism. That's what you think A is about. See, here's the bait and switch. You think Alcoholics Anonymous is about people who have drinking problems. That's what they think on the outside. That's why all your parents, you know what they say to you? You come in here and say you haven't had a drink for 10 years. Why do you have to still go to those meetings? They think that because you're not drinking, you're like cured. They don't realize that you were fucking crazy before you started drinking. You were crazy as a fucking loon before you started drinking. You were crazy while you were drinking. As a matter of fact, if it wasn't for alcohol, you would have blown your brains out before you were 18. That the only thing that stopped you from being a mass murderer was the alcohol, thank God for it. And you want something after you stopped drinking, you went back to the crazy, your default position is crazy, you went back to that deal again. Because the only thing that actually allowed you to keep your head on straight without blowing up the world was that when things got bad enough, or even if they didn't get bad, I mean, I didn't need an excuse to drink, awake was good enough for me, you know what I mean? I'm awake, let's have a drink, you know? You know, but the bottom line is, you know, somehow, some way, sometimes you just need a fucking drink, you know what I mean? Just crack it down, you know? And so what happens when they take away the booze and you're now dealing with the assholes? You know, I refer to assholes meaning every other human being other than yourself. And, you know, the bad news about that is you're an asshole too, you know? So, because when they're assholes, and when you're not calling them an asshole, you're in the shower and saying, I'm an asshole. This talk doesn't really work in the Kiwanis Club, does it? Works around the alcoholics, because they say, how's this guy reading my fucking mind? You know, what's the deal, you know? So, you know, here's the problem. Here we are, we stopped drinking, now we're dealing with alcoholism. And alcoholism, and we don't even, you know, we spend the next 3 or 4 years in AA just trying to realize what the hell alcoholism is, just to see what it looks like. You know, you see some guy gets up at a meeting or he starts talking at a discussion meeting about some sort of weird, crazy, fucking nutty stuff. Crazy, nutty stuff. And you look at him and you say, that fucking guy is crazy. And then all of a sudden the next thought is, holy shit, I thought like that the other day. You know what I mean? See, if I told you you were crazy, you'd say, go screw yourself. I'm not crazy. But if you see somebody crazy, and then all of a sudden put it together and says, holy shit, that guy's just like me. All of a sudden, that takes you about 3 or 4 years. You start realizing, I am one crazy son of a bitch. So you may be new and not understand what I'm saying. So if you've been here for a while, a year or two or three, and I tell you, you're crazy as shit, all you can do is nod your head because you know. Because you've been to the meetings, you've seen the people, you've seen yourself, you know how you think, you know what I mean? You know what's going on. You know that in every meeting you've gone to, even when you've shared the craziest shit, you know you're holding back the real crazy shit, you know what I mean? You know this crazy shit they haven't even heard yet, you know what I mean? Because no matter, you could share 80% of the crazy shit, you know? But you know there's crazy shit, I don't care if it's stuff, but you know there's shit you haven't shared that's there that, I'm sorry, going to have to be after death, you know what I mean? You know how crazy you are. So, you know, and that's the disease. It said men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, irritable, discontented, sober, unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. And the alcoholic life seems the only normal life. You see, that's it. Your craziness, which comes in the form of self-pity, blaming, selfishness, self-centeredness, 100 forms of self-delusion, self-seeking, stepping on toes of others, they retaliate. Above everything, we must get rid of the selfishness. That's the basic selfishness we must or it kills us. God makes that possible. That's what they said. But the bottom line is, the disease, the dis-ease, is something that you're going to just have until the day they bury it. And so you realize when you see a guy who has 10 years or 15 years or 20 years, and he ends up drinking again, you know 5 seconds before he took that drink, he was sober, physically. So somebody says to you, why the hell did he drink? You know why he drank. He drank because he suffered from alcoholism and was untreated because somehow he didn't make the connection with God or he didn't continue to do what he was doing that he had to do in order to keep the protection up. You know, in Christian circles, because that's what we call putting on the full armor of God. We have the same concept in here. Doing whatever you have to do to be protected and continuing to be in His will and having that in mind. What is it called? It says we are not cured of alcoholism. We can rest on our laurels. It says, well, we're heading for trouble if we do. Alcohol is a subtle foe. It'll come back to us. It'll get us, you know. So that's the thing we're dealing with. So the truth is, here's the problem. The problem is this. Once we got rid of the alcohol, and we realized it says, you got to go further. You know, Bill Wilson said to talk about emotional sobriety, the next frontier. It says the real problem with alcoholics is they've got unhealthy dependencies. I don't care what you want to call dependencies, whatever you want to call it, unhealthy. Somehow, some way, we are dependent. We live lives that are dependent upon crap that we just can't control. And we want so much to control. For some reason, we got to control it. Our sex life, our romance, our money life, and our feelings. Oh my God, we worship our, oh my God. Let me tell you how I feel, my feelings. You don't know how I feel, you know. All I want to do is talk about my feelings, 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 you know. Feelings are important, aren't they? No, they're not. What's important is if you go out and get, I'll tell you what's important. What's important is getting the milk for your children. I don't give a shit how you feel about getting the milk for your children. I don't care if you think it's unfair you should get the milk for your children. What's important is you go out and get the milk for your children. What's important is that you treat people kindly. I don't care how you feel about treating people kindly. What's important is that you do it. You know, and I told that thing, I think I told this group about, you know, the alcoholic mindset, how we think. You know, I come home and my wife says, and this is true, that this happens. Because I don't know whether all women do this. I suspect they do. There's some sort of school they go to. This is the way they operate. Being the weaker sex, and when I say way so weaker, believe me, I mean stronger. You understand what I'm saying? Because I know what the deal is. Because I've been around them. They're maniacal. You know what I mean? But guys are just stupid. They just too. Because considering they gotta just be sharper than us. You know, if we don't like something, we just slap it or hit it or something or kick it. They gotta be sharper. You know. So I come home and you know I'm tired. It's been a long day. My wife says we're out of milk. And automatically, I'm like, well, I want to... Because, first of all, this is what I don't like the fact that she doesn't come up to me and say, will you go get some milk? What is this we're out of milk shit? You know what I mean? This is a subtle, maniacal way. And now I got to get into some sort of... conversation? Why don't you just say, go out and get the fucking milk? You know what I mean? I need milk. Well, why don't you call me a milk? And by the way, are your arms broken? Is there something wrong with you? You couldn't get the milk? You know? Do I have to do everything? I earn the money. I get it. Isn't that something you should be doing? Getting the milk? You know what I mean? Why don't you say, get the milk? And I want to say, why don't you get the fucking milk? Why don't you get the milk? I got to get the milk. You know, because you know, I'm tired. And, you know, I got feelings. I'm not the only one here. You know, so maybe I get the milk. Maybe I don't. Then they screw the milk. You should get the milk. Let the kids, I don't care. Or maybe she guilts me or I feel guilty enough. I go out and I get the fucking milk. You know what I mean? I bring the milk back. You understand what I'm saying? I throw it in the refrigerator. She says, what's wrong with you? I said, what's wrong with me? I just had a long day and I have to get the freaking milk. And you couldn't get the milk. We have a big fight and, you know, everything like that. And the cops come and I start telling about the fucking milk, you know what I mean? You know, They don't understand how it is. You guys understand how it is, you know. You know, the truth is, all my kids care about is that there's milk in the refrigerator. They don't care whether I'm feeling sorry for myself. They don't care whether I'm feeling sorry. You know, see, alcoholics, and all alcoholics want to talk about is how they feel and why they did it and how it wasn't their fault and, you know, why'd she say it that way and she just asked me the other way. Yeah, whatever the hell we're talking about. That's the disease. And that kind of shit, that kind of thinking happens to me sober. As a matter of fact, you know what I used to think? And I'm not sure it wasn't so true, that I was a pretty nice guy when I was drinking. Some guys are nasty drunks. I was a nice guy when I was drinking. I was an asshole when I wasn't drinking. You know? So, I mean, you know, my problem centers in my mind, not my body. So here's the problem. If you're not drinking, if alcoholics drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol and they're restless, irritable, and discontented, unless they get an experience, a sense of ease, cover, which comes at once by taking a few drinks, if selfishness and self-centeredness is our problem, and if it has to do, somehow it's wrapped up with old ideas, which I connote to be old thinking patterns. It's old ways of thinking that come to me naturally. It's like being right-handed. My way of looking at things where I perceive things. I blame other people. I'm a blamer. I'm a you don't understand her. I'll show you. You know, I'm a resenter. It doesn't take much for me to be pissed at somebody or me to feel sorry for myself and compare my insides to somebody else's. You know, I'm a self-pity-aholic. I'm a please-love-me-aholic. I'm a whore-myself-out-for-you-aholic. As long as you love me, I'll do anything you want me to do. I am always complaining. If I'm complaining, which is all the time, it's because things aren't going my way. All I'm thinking about myself. I mean, I got a lot of shit going on in my mind, which to me isn't even a problem. It's just the way I am. It's just me. I said to my sponsor once, I said, I got mad, I got angry over someone. He says, you know, you better lose that anger. I said, that's my personality. That's just my personality. He said, well, Russell, let me explain something to you. It's your personality that's killing you. I was like to be told that shit. I thought it was the alcohol that's killing me. I got rid of the alcohol. He says, no, the alcohol was just a symptom. You drank alcohol because you got a fucked up personality. You understand what I'm saying? I'm sorry about the F-bomb, but I just feel like saying tonight, it feels like it fits, you know what I mean? It feels like it fits for this talk, you know what I mean? So this one won't go, they won't be playing this one in church. It's okay. It'll be okay. Every once in a while I can let loose, you know? And so here's the deal. If that's the case, if getting rid of the alcohol is not the cure, if that's just the first step, really, and now dealing with the crazy defects of character, the paggles, the crap that we got going, in order so that we can live a life where we've experienced much better and be rocking in the fourth dimension of existence, you know, so we can have remarkable things happen for us, so we can lose concerns of our little plans designed, stop being concerned with other people, losing fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter, being reborn. So like the Apostle Paul said, I've learned to be content in all things. I've learned the secret to be content in all things. Like Jesus said, he said, in this world you will have trouble, but be of good cheer, I've overcome the world. How do you overcome the world? How do you be like that guy, Al Kennedy, who spoke one night at a meeting, and I said he was great, and he walked out the room, my sponsor said he's got 3 months to live. How do you get that deal? When everything in the world is upsetting you, how do you get to that? I understand the drinking, how do you stop the thinking? You know, how are you comfortable in your own skin? How do you stop the... You know, I mean, I know what alcoholics are. Alcoholics are guys who say, they can't do that to me. They don't know who they're screwing with. I'll show them. Why is this always happening to me? I don't give a shit what they think about me. Alcoholics are just messed up. It's like Carl Menninger said. Alcoholics are, in his book, Men Against Themselves, he said, alcoholics are men and women who have to destroy themselves. Sober. Sober, they're out to destroy themselves. How do you do it? How do you do that? My sponsor said two things to me when he first came in. He says, you never have to drink again if you don't want to, and you never have to feel this way again if you didn't want to. And I wanted both deals. I didn't want to drink, and I never wanted to feel the way I felt. I stopped the drinking, but I didn't stop the feeling. How do you stop the feeling? How do you stop the feeling? The feeling is like that. The feeling is like that. And every time I've dealt with somebody who feels bad, it was always preceded by a whole lot of thinking. You ever notice that when you're feeling bad, you're depressed, things are going wrong? You ever notice that prior to you feeling that way, you've been thinking a lot? And so maybe sometimes you say to yourself, I gotta stop thinking, and that only what it does, it pairs gasoline on the fire, you start thinking even more. Yeah, because you know something? Because you take the thinking, bad thoughts, like I used to drink scotch. Because you're not only addicted to drinking, you're addicted to thinking. thinking bad shit about yourself and other people. So how are you going to stop that deal? You never know when to stop feeling sorry for yourself or thinking about other people or thinking how life is unfair or thinking about all that stuff. That's why you go to AA meetings and you feel good when you go to an AA meeting. Well, for the first 15 minutes you're thinking, you feel kind of crappy, but after that 15 minutes you start listening. Maybe the guy's saying something, he's entertaining. You start feeling better because for the first time you're not thinking about yourself, you're thinking about what he's saying. You start feeling good. The meeting ends, you feel pretty good. You know, you haven't been thinking about yourself, then you get in your car, you drive about 15 blocks, and it's back to the same old horseshit again. Until the next day where you get another meeting. It's like going to the bar over and over and over again. I'm not putting down meetings. But, you know, this is not the cure. The meetings are not the cure. This is to help us get through each day so that we don't have to drink or kill somebody. How do you actually get to the point where it's lifted? You know, the book says God makes that possible. God's the special ingredient. So the seventh and sixth step is part of that deal. That's why they call it an old timer step. That's the sandpaper. Six and seven is the sandpaper that really hones this thing down and perfects the deal. Not that anybody's going to get perfection, but you know, they saved the sixth step last time. It's our shot at perfection, getting rid of all our defects of character. And you may not be able to get rid of all of them, but you can get rid of a lot of them. You know, I started yesterday talking, I was talking to you about a turned over life, I think, the day, I think it was in the sixth step. You know, where that deal, when you first come in, you learn the concept of turning it over to God, turning it over. You got that, whatever, we'll pick some, a boss. He says something to you, or, you know, I don't know, he says something to you, it scares you. I don't know if we can afford to keep you, or something, whatever it is, he looks at you funny. And for the next 3 weeks, all you're doing is thinking about your boss, and what he's going to do, your boss, and you're thinking about the situation. You turn it over in your mind over and over again. You go to meetings, you talk about your boss. You go to your sponsor, you talk about your boss. You go to your friends, you talk about your boss. The more you talk about it, the worse you feel. You go to sleep thinking about your boss. What am I going to do if I lose my job? I'll never get another job because I'm a piece of shit, even though I'm the greatest. You know, I mean, you just all over the I'm the greatest guy in the world. They don't realize what a great worker I am. I don't even, you know, you're walking unemployable. 3 weeks later, you're underpaid. You know, I mean, you got all sorts of shit going on. You think, you know, you just got this vapid mind that's just absolutely crazy, driving you nuts. And then some guy says something to you like, you need to turn it over. Turn it over. He says, turn it over. You can't do anything. Your powers. You say the serenity prayer at that time. Help, give me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the power to change things, and the wisdom. You say it 10,000 times. You go to meetings, you pray, you do everything. And then one day, somehow, some way, you don't even know how to do it. You learn through trial and error and events to finally turn it over. You finally get to the point where you get sick and tired of getting sick and tired. You can't take it anymore. Like, and you say, look, I can't stop this thing. This thing is driving me crazy. You know, I'm going to give it to God. Whatever the God of my understanding is, whatever happens, happens. There's nothing I can do about it. And all of a sudden, you're at peace. It's not bothering you anymore. Some guy comes up to you and says, what about that boss thing? He says, oh, I turned it over. I turned it over. It only took 3.5 weeks, you know, but I turned it over. I didn't drink. I turned it over. You know what I mean? You go from it's the most major thing in your life to I turned it over to the next thing, which happens almost immediately, right? The next thing. Then the next thing. So, you know, after about 10 years, you pretty much can turn things over. It takes about 3 or 4 days or a week, but you can turn things over. And after about 20 years, you know, it takes you maybe a day to turn things over. You know what I mean? After about 25 years, all of a sudden you're pretty much capable of 20. You've experienced mostly everything. You've experienced cancer 3 times. You've been bankrupt and going out of business 10,000 times. Your wife has given you that crazy argument. You've got nothing. You've experienced this program through all sorts of vagaries of life 2 billion times. And you practice and practice. So by the time 25 years, you're pretty much turning shit over within an hour. Something happens, it disturbs you. An hour later, you're gone. It's over. It's on to the next thing. 30 years, 33 years, something happens. You don't even turn it over because it's turned over. Because you're turned over. You know, you're a turnover. You live in a turned over life. You live in a turned over life, you know. Where when it hits you, it's like Teflon. It's already been turned over. You understand what I'm saying? Does this make any sense?
Yes.
Imagine if you didn't have to turn it over because it was turned over. You know why? Because you believe in God. Because as you go through the trials, it's like the Apostle James. You know, James was the major book they used. It says, rejoice when you have trials, because when you have trials and you persevere through trials and you focus on God, your faith grows, you mature in your faith, and that builds character. And that's what the seventh step is about. It's about character and humility. And the end rung of character is hope. and you live a life of hope instead of a life of fear. So what happens is you can take things like, so the doc says you have cancer, and you say, thank you very much, doctor, and you leave and you go and you do an AA meeting. And you might as well have said, you know, go get a piece of bubble gum or something, because somehow, some way, it doesn't affect you the way it affected you when you first came to AA. So how do you do this stuff? So it has something to do, the seventh step has something to do with humility. Now, I was going to give my world famous talk on humility, but I never really do it with a group this small. I don't know. I don't know that much about humility. I wouldn't, you know, you wake up in the morning and say, oh, I think I'll be humble today. You know, forget it. So I want to talk to you a little bit about humility, the concept of humility. I don't know what it is, but I know what it is when I look. I know what it is when I look at it. When I see it, I know it. You know what I mean? A couple people. There are some people that would think, well, this isn't such a humble thing getting up here and talking, right? Those are usually people that don't talk. They sit in the back and they judge. Sometimes the humblest guy in the room is the guy who's talking, and the most arrogant guy in the room is the guy who's sitting in the back of the room thinking bad thoughts about the person who's talking. You know, you can't do this shit if you're wrapped up in yourself. Did you know that? It's very hard to speak to 200, 300 people, whatever it is, the deal is, if you got your head up your ass. You know what I mean? You got to have something together. You know, but it's very easy to sit in the back of the room being scared to come up here. You understand what I'm saying? Because you're so wrapped up in yourself and judging other people. Yeah, so we got a warped idea of what humility is. It's not necessarily whether you're talking or you're not talking or stuff like that. It's an inside deal. So I want to talk to you a little bit about the seventh step and humility and how it sort of works through your life. And I often say, you don't work the seventh step. The seventh step works you. I think that line from James is a great line where it says, rejoice. Your attitude towards when you have trials and tribulations, because when you persevere through the trials and tribulations, focusing on God, it builds character and faith. So really, when you think about it, the thing that really is the special ingredient, the secret ingredient, is the trials and the tribulations. It's the crap that happens to you, and that's been happening to you, that, you ready for this, that you don't like. It's the stuff that's happening in your life that you don't like, which is really helping you tremendously. That's a shitty thing to say, don't you? You know what the big one, you know what the 12-12 says? It says you learn the value of suffering. You don't like that deal, do you? You don't like that. You want me to say that you come in here and everything's wonderful. No, you don't come in here and everything's wonderful. A lot of crap happens over a period of time. You learn to deal with the crap. I feel, you know, that's what happens. Then you look back on the stuff you went through and how you went through it, and it looked like it was a horror story. You say, man, that stuff was the greatest thing that ever happened to me. You know, because it built me up. It's about humility. So what is humility? Let me tell you a little bit something. I was at a meeting the other day, and they were actually talking about the fifth step. And so this may sound like a little fifth step. They're all sort of mushed up anyway, but it's really about humility. You know, the fifth step is something about talking to other people, right? Isn't it about admitting to yourself, God, and another person, the exact name? You know, isn't that what it is? So I want to tell you a little story, and maybe this will sort of talk to you a little bit about humility. You know, one of the things it says is the way we get a new perspective in AA. You ready for this? 100 forms of humiliation and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. That's in the seventh step. The way we learn about humility and get a new perspective based on humility is by 100 forms of humiliation and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. Now, I don't know anything about being humble, but I know about humility. I've got a PhD. I mean, I know about humiliation. I got a PhD in humiliation. I know what it's like to be humiliated. I know what it's like to feel down. I know what it's like to be crushed. I know what it's like to be powerless. I know what it's like to be worried, to be in fear, to have bad feelings. I know what it's like to be going through shit. I know what it's like to be raising a wife, having a wife and 4 kids and having no money in the bank and having your house in foreclosure. I know what it's like to be told you got cancer twice. I know what it's like to have problems and go through problems and do meetings anyway, even though you don't want to go and do step meetings. I know what that deal is all about. I know what it's like to sponsor people who shit on you, you know what I mean? And you know that, you know, and I'm not even talking about you. I know what it's like to deal with people that betray. I know what it's like to deal with all the stuff that you guys deal with every day, and instead of getting mad about it and upset about it, go into meetings, try to help other people and keep on going. I know what that deal is all about. I know, you know, you can talk the talk, but I know what it's like to walk the walk. I know what that deal is all about. You know, there's the narrow road that few find, and there's the broad highway that many go to. You know, I know, you know, when all is said and done in this deal, believe me, there'll be a lot more said than done. I know what it's like when they separate the men from the boys. I know the men and I know the boys. I know what each one looks like. You know, and I know what it's like to be either one. I get that deal. So one day I was about 7 years sober, and this is just a for instance, just a little for instance about something. And I had something that was bothering me. It was a life thing. You know, in order to really grow up in this thing, you need a couple of deals. Here's the ingredients you need. Number one, you need a live alcoholic. We pretty much have that covered here. He's got to be not drinking. We pretty much have that here. And he's got to be experiencing life. We pretty much got that here. So if you're alive and you're an alcoholic and you're not drinking, you're experiencing life and you're going through the shit, you're pretty much got all the ingredients to be a superstar on this deal and learn about humility. You know what I mean? I'll tell you what it feels like. It feels bad. Don't be praying. Listen, I'll tell you something. You pray for it at your own risk. You pray for humility at your own risk. It don't feel good. It don't feel good. Hey, listen. Do you remember how you came to Alcoholics Anonymous? Was that after a real nice, pleasant run? Do you remember how you got in here? What was it like? You had just won the lottery, you know, you were making $1 million, you lost all that weight, you were buff and everything like that. You had this good-looking gal, this good-looking guy, you had a perfect life. You said, whoa, you know something? I'm thinking, I wonder what they're doing down at Alcoholics Anonymous today. I'll check that sucker out. So you remember how you felt, you know, right when you said, okay, I'll go to an AA meeting? That's sort of like what it feels like for the next 20 years, you know what I mean? That's what, if you want to get this. So here's the deal. Now, most people think that the fifth step, which is all these steps, what it says in the seventh step, it says something very interesting, which is true. It says every one of these steps require humility. They push you forward with greater and greater humility. There's not a step here, whether it be the first step where you admit your powerless, your life, whether it's the second step or this third step where you turn your life over, or the fifth step when you talk to somebody, you're sick. Every single step, everything you do, eighth and ninth, requires humbling yourself. Humbling yourself. Turn it over to God. Humbling yourself. It's just a constant number of spiritual exercises to make you humbler and humbler, more and more humility. So you're not getting... Now, the interesting truth is at the end of that deal, it's a great feeling of peace and serenity. But going through it, I mean, it's like going through the AA car wash where they're beating you up with mallets, you know what I mean? They're just beating you up. You're just going through it. So let me give you an example, which, you know, now most people think the fifth step is about talking, right? When they talk about the fifth step, what do they talk about? They talk about sharing stuff with your sponsor and talking. I'm an alcoholic. Let me tell you something. And I'm an alcoholic who likes to talk. You know what I mean? I'm a talker. You know, I used to go to bars. And you know what I did in bars? I would sit in bars and I would talk. And I would talk and I would talk. I would talk to my buddies in the bars. I would talk shit about other people. And then they would talk shit about other people. They would tell me how much they agreed with. I would say, you know, my wife's a bitch. And they'd say, hey, your wife is a bitch. You know what I mean? Hey, if you think your wife's a bitch, let me tell you about my wife. Right? She's a real bitch. I said, man. She really is a bitch, you know what I mean? I'd see a guy walk in, you know, at the other end of the bar with a good-looking blonde. I'd say, look at that asshole. I'd say, man, that guy is an asshole. You know? I used to tell my wife, I said, you ought to meet the guys at the bars. They're the only people that really understand me. You know, alcoholics love other alcoholics because we're so full of shit. Every once in a while you run into a non-alcoholic and you say something like one of your alcoholic things and you say, what are you, crazy? I say, I don't like that guy. He's full of shit. I like hanging around with guys that agree with me. You know, I don't want to hang out with a guy that, you know, looks down on me, you know. Everybody's looking down on me and stuff like that. So I was having a life problem, which is to say I was thinking of, you can always tell when you're having a problem with life because you start thinking about yourself even more than you usually think about yourself. You know, usually all we do is think about ourselves, but when you're having a problem, you're really thinking about yourself. You know, instead of thinking 1,000 thoughts a minute about yourself, you think 10,000 thoughts a minute by yourself. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm used to a certain amount of anxiety, because when you think about yourself, you think bad shit about yourself and other people. But when you really have a light problem, then you it like soups it up a little. It's like thinking about yourself on steroids. What's going to happen to me and everything like that. And these things come along all the time. And I was having a problem with something that was going on in my life, having to do with the business thing. And when you get to the point where you start thinking about yourself and you start worrying about yourself, you got all sorts of things going on about yourself. And you know, then all of a sudden the other old idea kicks in that you really can't tell anybody because they wouldn't understand anyway. You know, I can't really tell my sponsor. It's a legal thing. He's not a lawyer. I can't tell another lawyer because if I tell another lawyer, they're going to think I'm stupid. You know, and I don't want anybody to think I'm stupid because you know, then it'll make me feel bad. And I know I don't give a shit what they think about me, but what if? But I worry about what they think about me. It's very paradoxical when you're a lot of contradictions, a lot of shit. When you're an alcoholic, it's very complicated, you know. You know, you don't care really what other people think about you, but all you do is think about what are they going to think about me. It's hard to explain, you know. You really got to be there, you know, to understand it. You know, scotch helps a lot, but if you're not drinking, it's a horror story, you know. So what happens is, so I was going through this for 6 months. I couldn't tell my wife because what the heck does she know? You know, she doesn't even drink at the bar with me. You know, she's like, I couldn't tell my wife. I couldn't tell my kid. I couldn't tell anybody. So all I would do is, you ready for this? Think about it. Which you ready for this? Didn't solve the problem. It had something to do with terrible things were going to happen to me. I didn't know what it was going to be, but it was going to be terrible. It was going to be very embarrassing, very humiliating. And so I went to a retreat. I was 7 years sober, and I went to a retreat. It was run by a guy named Father Al Grau. He was a Jesuit priest. He was sober 35 years. He had a PhD in psychology. And he ran the Palm Beach Institute for, you know, addiction. I mean, you ready for this? Jesuit priest. You know, Jesuits are pretty high on the list in the Catholic circles. You know, PhD in psychology. Oh, he was a World War II hero, having survived the Bataan 1,000-mile march. And 35 years sober. So this is next to Jesus. He was it. You know what I mean? So I knew, and you know, the priest can't tell you anything. So I knew that this was the guy that was going to solve my problem. You know what I mean? I knew, like, if anybody, this was the guy. You know, this was like the Pope. You know what I mean? This is going to solve my problem. And I'm a Jewish kid from New York, but I'm going to go to this guy. So I signed up. You sign up for this thing. You've been to a retreat. So I go in to see him. And I say to him, so I was going through, what was I going through? A problem. I was going through a problem. I was being humiliated. I was scared. My life had become what? Unmanageable. But it wasn't because of the drinking. It was because of the thinking, right? You ever have that happen to you? It's a bitch, isn't it? Doesn't feel good. You don't like it, right? That's the program. That's the seventh step. It's happening to you. It's like the dog on the porch. Every once in a while, he takes a breath and he howls and, you know, one guy said, hillbilly says to the other, why is your dog howling? He says, because there's a nail sticking under the porch, and every time he breathes, it hits him and it hurts. He says, why doesn't the dog move? He says, I guess it doesn't hurt enough. You know, that's the deal. Welcome to AA. Welcome to recovery. You're in pain, so, you know, what's your problem? Rejoice. Say, this is great. Bring it on. I was trying to grow up. This is going to help me, you know? Instead of being a thumb-sucking crybaby. So, in any event, so I go to see this guy, Father Al Grau. So I get in there, and he says, okay, what can I do for you? And he says, Father, I got this problem. He says, well, tell me about the problem. He says, well, I'm 7 years sober. I've done my steps. I do the thing. I sponsor, blah, blah, you know, whatever. He says, well, here's the problem. And I start telling him the problem. I don't get halfway through the problem. And he holds up his hand and he says, stop. I said, what? He says, I'm not the guy to hear this. I said, no. Yeah, this was like quidus interruptus, you know what I mean? I was just getting a heavy steam on this. No. You're the guy to hear this. No, I am not the guy to hear this. Father, you are the guy to hear this. You got to hear this story. He says, I am not the guy to hear this. You are the guy to hear this. You know, he was finally, whatever, out of sobriety or because he's sober or he didn't want to start. He says, okay, talk to me. So I go through blah, 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 and tell him the problem and everything. And I finish and I said, and that's the problem. He says, "Are you done?" I said, "Yeah, I'm done." So he says, so I said, "So what do you think?" And he says, "You want to know what I think?" He says, "Yeah, I want to know what you think." He says, "I'll tell you what I think." He says, "I think you're full of shit." Now, I'm not a Catholic, but I'm pretty sure you're not supposed to do that if you're a priest, you know what I mean? Maybe they just do that with Jewish kids. I don't know. Maybe it's that Jewish thing. I don't know. That could be, I don't know. Then if I was a Catholic, you know, I went nuts. And then he did for the next 10 minutes. He told me in detail why I was full of shit. It wasn't enough to tell me I was full of shit. He defined it. You know, he did a comprehensive study on shitness. And how shitty I was. And then if he was done with that, he did the AA Catholic Jesuit priest thing. After he beat the shit out of me, he said, "Go with God, my son." with the hand. He did the hand movements, you know? So I walked out the door. My mind was exploding. We're in seven-step territory now. This is dealing. Now remember, whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. This thing that was happening in my life that I couldn't let go of and I couldn't do anything with, it was almost like drinking. I couldn't stop drinking. I couldn't stop thinking. Had to do with a defect of character, an old idea I had that was so embedded in me that I couldn't get rid of, and I didn't even know what it was. It had something to do with people pleasing. That's the end. I didn't know what it was. I didn't recognize it. All I knew was something terrible was going to happen. They were going to laugh at me. They were going to feel bad. I didn't know how to get rid of it. It was like locked on into my DNA. And I walked out of there and I poured my heart out to this guy and he told me I was full of shit and I was going nuts. And I walked out and I on my way to my room, I maybe bumped into three or four people and I explained to them all, "Don't go see that crazy priest. He's a nut. You know? You know, don't go see that guy." Expecting relief, you know. I got to my room. They had a little cot there with a little cross up above it. I sat there, and I'm thinking, I'm doing the alcoholic thing, you know. You know, love and tolerance is my code. He's supposed to do this. I said, "I got to report this guy to the Pope. I don't know what the deal is, but I think he's supposed to say three Hail Marys or something. You don't tell somebody they're full of shit, you know. And who does he think he is?" And now, going on and on. My mind was like a blast furnace, you know. And all of a sudden, a thought came to me. And this is the thought. It went right through my mind, just like that. Whap. It went, dangerous thought. Because I had been to enough AA meetings. I had done enough of the steps. I was on 67, all that sort of stuff. Where if you get schooled in this thing, this shit happens. When the pupil's ready, the teacher appears. All of a sudden, this thought came to me. You know what the thought was? This was the thought. Maybe he's right. And the next thought, like a nanosecond later, says, "He is right." And I heard every single word he said. And it hit me like a brick. It hit me like the day I realized that I needed to stop drinking. The day I realized that I was powerless over alcohol, that my life had become unmanageable, I realized something, a realization came to me about the way I was thinking about something that was crazy, and I had no reason to feel guilty about it. And it had to do with taking on somebody else's problems that they caused themselves and thinking that I needed to be responsible to fix it or else I would look bad. Had to do with people pleasing. Which, by the way, if you're going to hang around with the crazy people in this organization, Well People's Anonymous, you better get that lesson down pretty good. Because alcoholics are experts in making you feel guilty for the shit they caused themselves and then blaming you. You understand what I'm saying? You know, James, you wouldn't understand. And something that had been bothering me for 6 months prior to that time, left like that, gone. Never to bother me again. And I was able to deal with people on a whole different level. I was able to help them with their problems and tell them the truth without feeling responsible for their problems. Without feeling any responsibility for their problems. For the messes they caused themselves. Help me be a better sponsor, help me be a better human being, help me to be a better lawyer. You know, help me to be better in a lot of areas. Now, here's the interesting thing about that. So what does that have to do with humility? The reason it had something to do with humility is this. Most people think, well, that sounds like a fifth step thing. You know, you're like, no, you see what the fifth step, the beauty of the fifth step. You see, because here's the deal. You think it's about talking. I'm an alcoholic. You know, I knew about talking. I talked about my problems about myself long before I came to AA. I love sitting around talking about me. I love talking about me. I mean, if there's anything I want to do is talk to a psychiatrist, talk to you, talk to everybody, monopolize the conversation about me. I'll tell you what I'm not good at doing. I'm not a good listener. I'm a terrible listener because I'm arrogant and I'm self-centered. And the only thing I want to hear you say is, you're right, your wife is a bitch. You know, and I'll tell you, you'd say anything other than you're right to me, I ain't even listening. I don't want to hear it. I'm like, screw you, you know what I mean? And you see, you know what humility is? I'll tell you what it looks like. It looks like a guy listening to a Jesuit priest who's telling him he's full of shit. That's what I could never do. What I could never do as an alcoholic is listen to somebody and sit there who was telling me I was full of shit and why I was full of shit and take it and listen to it. And maybe even get mad about it, but listen to what he was saying. You know, I was the guy who was, if I was in a meeting and somebody was talking, I didn't like what they were saying, you know what I mean? If I don't like what somebody's saying in a meeting, you know, if you throw a rock into a group of dogs, the one that yells loudest is the one that gets hit. If I don't like something in the meeting, these guys piss me off, I was the guy who got up and left. I didn't sit there and try to figure it out, you know, because I didn't have the humility to listen to somebody who was criticizing me, even who was the truth, because I was like the Jack Nicholson movie, A Few Good Men, the truth, you can't handle the truth. I didn't have the humility to shut up and listen to somebody tell me I was wrong. And when you don't have the humility to listen to somebody who's telling you where you're wrong or you need to develop a different perspective, you never get better because you never get off of the... Because, hey, if you don't change the direction you're walking, you're always going to wind up where you're headed. So listening, being able... my sitting there telling him that and then listening to him was a form of humility. On the heels of experiencing a problem, while I was focusing on God and praying to Him, and the whole thing worked like magic. And that's sort of like the way that somehow, that's the way the seventh step works. Humbly, you know, that's what it says. We humbly ask that He remove these defects of character. Humbly, we humbly do these things. It may be listening to somebody, listen, I've sponsored a lot of people. You know, you can tell. I sponsor guys, they get mad at me, they yell at me, but they listen. They listen. They come back and they listen. And I've sponsored other guys, they say, screw you, and they walk out the door and never see them again. And I know exactly what's going to happen to them, and it never fails. When they can't listen to the truth, it never fails. They go out and drink again, they drug, they do that sort of stuff. Because they don't have the humility to take it. This isn't a theoretical thing with me. This is a thing that I have to deal with as far as application is concerned. I know what this looks like. I know what it looks like in an alcoholic. I know what it looks like. I've got a sponsor. I know what it looks like in me. The inability to take it and listen to somebody else and swallow truths about yourself and have stuff happen to you and listen to crap that you don't want to hear. Because you want to tell how you're not to blame, it's not your fault, and life is unfair, and you don't want to hear somebody tell you, listen to me, I don't want to hear that bullshit story because you're full of shit. You don't want to hear that. And so what you do is you either look for somebody who's going to tell you, yes, your wife is a bitch, you know what I mean? You're right. Or you look for somebody that you know there's a possibility that you're going to get the truth and you're going to have to sit there and take it. And that's the difference between the men and the boys, and that's how the seventh step works. So next week we'll talk about step 8 and 9. Not next week. 2 weeks from now. Thank you very much. I'm sure you